Touchdown minus 113 hours, 22 minutes. Doug sat alone in his quarters, staring at his blank wall screen. Declare our independence, he thought. Just like that. Tell the Flatlanders out there that we no longer belong to Kiribati Corporation or any company or government on Earth. What words do I use to get that across? His quarters were larger than his office, one of the new suites big enough to partition into a sitting room and a separate bedroom. It even had its own bathroom. Leaning back in his comfortable chair of yielding plastic foam, Doug asked the computer to call up the American Declaration of Independence from his history program. Jefferson's powerful, eloquent words filled the wall screen. Doug reduced the display to a less imposing size, then spent several minutes studying it. Finally, he shook his head. That was fine for 1776, he told himself. But this is nearly 300 years later. They sound pretty stilted now. Besides, he thought, everybody'd recognize the source. I'd be accused of plagiarism. That's no way to start a new nation. He thought back to his studies of military history. The American general who had commanded the Allied armies in Europe during World War II, what was his name? Ike something? A few touches of his laser pointer, and he had Dwight Eisenhower's multimedia biography on the screen. He muted the sound and scrolled slowly through it, searching for the terse statement that Eisenhower had written back to Washington when the Nazis surrendered. His aides had wanted a long, flowery announcement filled with stirring phrases and fulsome praise for the various generals. Eisenhower had tossed their suggestions aside and written, there it is. The mission of this Allied force was fulfilled at 0241 local time, May 7, 1945. That's what I want, Doug said to himself. Short, strong, direct. He cleared his throat and called to the computer. Dictation. Then, after a moment's thought, he said slowly and clearly, Moonbase hereby declares its independence from Earth and asks for admission to the United Nations. He stared at the words for a long moment, then decided they said what he intended to say. Briefly, he thought of running them past his mother and Lev Brudnoy, but he shook his head at the idea. They'd want to tinker with the statement, maybe hedge it or decorate it with reasons and arguments. Ear candy. I'm in command. We've all agreed to that, and we've all agreed to declaring our independence. This is the message we send to Foray and the rest of Earth. Doug called up the communications desk at the command center. Beam this message to UN headquarters in New York, he said, and spray it to every antenna on Earth. All the commsats, too. Send it by laser to Kiribati and to Masterson Corporation's headquarters in Savannah. The chief comtech on duty was a young man that Doug had played against in Moonbase's annual low-gravity Olympic Games. He grinned as he scanned Doug's message. Right away, boss, he said. Doug blanked his screen and leaned back in his foam chair. Okay, it's done. Now to see if it has any effect. Touchdown minus 112 hours, 17 minutes. Although Lunar University had no real campus, its heart was the plushly equipped studio where teaching was done through electronic links to Earth and virtual reality programs. Wilhelm Zimmermann liked his creature comforts. He demanded them. He had come to Moonbase because the Verdammt Treaty had closed his university department in Basel. He had given up cigars and strudel and even beer, but he still managed to overeat, under-exercise, and drive Moonbase's supply and maintenance staffs into frenzies with his demands for couches and padded chairs big enough to take his girth comfortably. He still dressed in the gray, old-fashioned three-piece suits he had brought to Moonbase with him 7 years earlier. He had personally designed a set of nanomachines to keep the suits in perfect repair, renewing fraying cuffs and worn spots, atom by atom. The nanomachines even kept his clothes clean. Still, as he sat sprawled in his favorite sofa, he looked like a rumpled mess, his jacket unbuttoned and flapping loose, his vest stretched tight across his ample stomach, tie loose from shirt collar, the halo of stringy gray hair surrounding his bald pate as disheveled as King Lear in the storm scene.
"A direct trajectory here?" he was asking Doug. "It is customary first to go to a space station, yeah?"
"I think they might be worried that most of the people in the space stations are on our side," Doug said. Doug was sitting in one of the oversized, overpadded armchairs facing the sofa. Built by nanomachines that Zimmerman himself had programmed, the furniture looked ludicrously out of place in this vast, echoing electronics studio carved out of the lunar rock. No one else was in the studio. The lights had been turned off, except for the lamps on the end tables that flanked the sofa. Slender, graceful stalks of lunar aluminum. The tables were built of lightweight but sturdy honeycomb sandwich metal, also produced by nanomachines. Zimmerman nodded as if Doug's answer satisfied him.
"And you have notified the UN that we are now an independent nation?"
Nodding, Doug replied, "The UN, and as much of the news media as we could reach."
"Still the troop ship has not turned around?"
Zimmerman's accent seemed to get thicker each year.
"Not yet." "And there is no reaction from the UN to your declaration of independence?"
"Not yet," Doug repeated.
"So," the professor stretched out his short arms, "now we have nothing to do except wait, yeah?
And prepare." Zimmerman's shaggy brows shot up.
"Prepare for what? Either they accept our independence, or the peacekeepers come in here and close everything."
"I don't intend to allow them to close Moonbase," Doug said evenly. Zimmerman snorted.
"And how do you intend to stop them? With prayer, maybe?"
"That's why I've come here to you, Professor," said Doug. "We need your help."
"To do what? Make a magic wand for you out of nanomachines? A death ray, maybe, you want?"
Doug was accustomed to the old man's blustering. "I was thinking more along the lines of medical help," he said.
"We may need... I thought I'd find you here, Willie."
Chris Cardenas came striding out of the shadows. Despite her years on the moon, she still kept a deep tan, thanks to ultraviolet lamps. To Doug, she looked like a California surfer. Broad shoulders, trim build, sparkling blue eyes. She kept her sandy hair clipped short and wore a loose, comfortable jumpsuit of pastel yellow. No jewelry, no decorations of any kind. From the easygoing, no-fuss look of her, you would never suspect she was a Nobel laureate nanotech researcher.
"Our young friend here wants me to make everyone bulletproof," Zimmerman said, grudgingly dragging his bulk to one side of the sofa so Cardenas could sit beside him.
Even on the moon, Zimmerman did not move fast.
"No," Doug protested. "All I'm asking, you think perhaps, is that the nanomachines you carry inside you will protect you against machine guns? They saved your life twice before, but they don't make you a superman."
"Willie," said Cardenas with a charmer smile, "why don't you let Doug tell you what he wants?"
"Medical supplies," Doug blurted before Zimmerman could say another word.
"If we're cut off from Earth for more than a couple of months, we're going to run short of medical supplies. I was wondering if nanomachines could be developed to replace or augment some of the pharmaceuticals we use."
"How can I do that? Your own silly rules prevent me from using nanomachines anywhere inside Moonbase except in my laboratory," Zimmerman grumbled.
"The safety rules, yes, I know," said Doug.
"Even my furniture I had to make in my lab and then get the crew to schlep into here."
"We can't take the chance of having nanomachines propagate inside the base."
"Nonsense," Zimmerman muttered. "Superstition."
Cardenas stepped in again. "So you're ready to bend the safety rules, Doug?"
"We'll have to, at least a little."
"And you need help with medical supplies, right?"
"Right."
"Aspirin, maybe?" Zimmerman grumbled suspiciously.
"More than aspirin," said Doug.
"Specifically?"
"I don't know, specifically. You'll have to talk to the medical staff."
"I will have to? These are your orders? You are the field marshal now, and I am under your command?"
"That's exactly right," said Cardenas, still smiling sweetly.
That's the situation we're in, Willie, and we've all got to